Well, we have another question for our sermon title, as I think I did an analysis once. Most of my sermon titles are questions, because this is where we come to find answers, so it makes sense. And this particular question is obviously rhetorical, as most of them are. Its work is biblical? How can that be? We look at work as a necessary evil sometimes. And I'm here to tell you it's not a necessary evil, because it's not evil. It might be necessary, it might not, but there's no evil involved. And there are some people who will dispute that, and they're welcome to do so, but let's pay attention to the fact that before the fall, Adam was given something to do. Might not have been very much work, naming all the animals, but he still had a job to do. So if work predates the fall, I'm not sure we can refer to work writ large as evil. So let's get that out of the way to begin with. And there's a couple of things, and this is obviously coming from our Thessalonians passage, where Paul writes to the church at Thessalonica about some problems, which he frequently wrote about. I mean, we're frequently trying to figure out how the church works by looking at problems that were addressed and working backwards, which isn't the end of the world, but I frequently wish that Paul would have written, I don't know, 3 Thessalonians or something else that just laid it out a little more clearly so we didn't have to put in this much work, but there you go. This particular passage of Scripture is one of the most perniciously misused that I've come across. And this could just be where I grew up, in the particular sort of political frame of mind that was there. But the first thing I want to get out of the way is that this passage does not in any way, shape, or form address the notion of welfare per se. I have had people read out loud from whatever translation they've got, that if a person will not work, they shall not eat, as a reason why you should not support soup kitchens, which is a reason why the government should not be involved in welfare. This is wrong on about as big a level as you can possibly get. There is nothing in this passage of Scripture that talks about people who are unable to work. This talks about people who choose not to work. People who choose to be idle, and a better translation probably is lazy. One of the problems with idle is that what exactly does it mean? Being idle, as one of my favorite not-quite-philosophers, P.G. Woodhouse, once said, the gift of being idle is given to almost no one. And it's true. Hardly anybody is able to just do nothing. I myself have never met anyone who is able to just do nothing day after day. I know lots of people who do things that they look at as nothing, or maybe other people look at as nothing, but it's not the same as doing nothing. Being idle is extremely difficult. And it's difficult for us to understand. Being lazy, on the other hand, that's something we all understand. Being lazy is when you know what needs to be done and you just don't do it anyway, for whatever reason. And we're not talking about the good reasons. We're not talking about, you know, I didn't go and do that thing because I have a broken leg and I can't get there. That's not being lazy, that's just being sensible. Being lazy is saying, I just don't feel like it. I just don't want to do it. I have no reason not to, but I'm not going to anyway. And there's some problems with that, and not least of which is a problem that Paul addresses. And that lazy people find it difficult to keep their laziness to themselves. And what Paul is talking about here, and I love the way the New International Version translates verse 11. We hear that some among you are idle. Lazy would be better. They are not busy, they are busybodies. What a great use of the English language. Like, how are you ever going to forget that phrase? They're not busy, they're busybodies. And that's what Paul's talking about, these people who don't work. The issue with their not working is less they're not working, and it's more what they're doing when they should be working. They're getting around and interfering with people who are working. And we need to remember that work has fundamental value in and of itself. So therefore, interfering with other people's work is fraught with peril. Now, we do need to get some other things clear. This is going to be one of these sermons that has a lot of, well, let's deal with sort of the negative outcomes or the negative possibilities of a lot of these things. Work has fundamental worth. That's just a given. But work is not the place for you to find your self-esteem or your value. Work can be overdone. Work is not something to which you should become addicted. You shouldn't become addicted to anything. But work addiction is one of those really tricky ones, because all things being equal, most people will applaud you for being a work addict. And I'm not talking about people who work hard and maybe work more than you or more than me. I'm talking about people who are addicted to work, people who find their self-esteem, who find all of their value wrapped in what they do. I read a book a number of years ago that changed my view of what I did forever. I remember the author, the name of the book is Working Ourselves to Death, and talked about work being an addiction just like every other addiction, because first it destroys your life and then it kills you. There's no glory in work addiction. Work addiction is just like heroin addiction. It's just like being an alcoholic or anything else. It takes over your life, destroys your life, and kills you. That's not what Paul's talking about either. But Paul is saying that you should be working. Does Paul say anywhere in here that that requires that you get paid for this job? No, because I've heard people try and spin this into saying that, you know, you should never really retire, which is equally ridiculous. Work is the exercise of energy on your behalf to a worthwhile end. I don't know if that's a proper definition anywhere. That's the one I've come up with. Work is what you do to create something worthwhile. Sometimes you get paid for it, sometimes you don't. It's the working towards something that's worthwhile that makes all the difference in the world. And what some people think is that therefore every job you do must have some kind of ultimate significance. Well, I'll give you that one as a half-truth. Just make sure you don't fall on the wrong half. Because work that I do every day, like the 5 days a week that I go to my job, to say that that work has ultimate value is not easy. It's not valueless, it creates great value to other people and a whole bunch of other things. But the primary outcome of me working 5 days a week, as far as I'm concerned, is feeding my family and letting me come here every week. And I don't want to minimize the fact that this congregation and Knox support the ministry here, but we know perfectly well this is not the kind of congregation that's going to have a full-time minister. So we need to build in that gap, and I do that Monday to Friday somewhere else. Because what I'm called to do as much as anything is be part of the family I'm part of and exercise the gifts upon me, one of which is preaching. So the job I do is part of moving me into that. And I learned this from my father. My father worked for more than 40 years for Canada Post. A lot of it is a letter carrier. And every once in a while, in my hearing, people would sort of ask him, like, how can you stand that? Like, it's got to be... I said, well, what do you mean, stand? It's a job. I do my job. I work to live. I don't live to work. I don't go to my job because that's all the only thing I do that matters. I said, well, do you hate it? He said, well, of course I don't hate it. Nobody does the same thing for more than 40 years that they hate if they can possibly get out of it. But of all the crazy things that we have inflicted on the generation right below mine and the one below that, is this idea that you should only do what you love. If you have somehow drunk deep this notion that says, you know, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life, you're guaranteed to spend a lot of your time unhappy. Because what is it that you can do 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year, however many years, that you're going to love every moment? Nothing. Work is not where we go to find the things we love. The work that you do, like Dad said, there are lots of things he liked about his job. You know, he liked being outside, he liked dogs, he liked the people he worked with. He worked inside sometimes, like he was an inside postal worker for a number of years, and he liked what he did there. But it wasn't something he loved. He did it because by doing that, he could support his family, and he could do the things that he did love. Spend time with his kids, spend time with his wife, spend time at church, do the things that he enjoyed, that gave him that inner life, that gave him that spark. He didn't get that from his job, because you don't have to get that from your job. You need to get it from the things you do. A life that has no life-giving activities in it is a terrible life to live. You don't have to get that from your job. And if your job doesn't do that for you, if your job simply provides a paycheck for you to get that somewhere else, that's a perfectly fine job. And going to a seminar where somebody tells you that job's obviously worthless because you don't love every second of it is a poor use of your time. And you can go to seminars like that, and I strongly recommend you avoid them. Because work isn't just what you get paid for. Work is what you do to make a difference. And if it's at first hand or second hand or third hand removed, it doesn't matter. What you do has to move into this idea of making a difference. Work is biblical. It's a great gift to us. I put this experiment to you for you to try. It won't work on people in this room anymore because now you've all heard the same thing. But next time you're hanging out with somebody, just ask them, you know, what are some of the best days you've ever had? Like when you think of really great days, you know, what do you think of? And of course, some of them will be vacations, you know, spent the day on the beach just sort of laying around. But I'm pretty sure what you will find for most people that their best days can be honestly described as work. Probably not their job, probably not work they got paid for, but that time they got together with their friends to help somebody build a garage. The time they got together to help someone put on a big meal for a bunch of people. These things are all work, in that they take energy, that you need to do something. But we've got this weird dichotomy that says if I don't like what I'm doing, then it's work. And if I do like what I'm doing, it's something else. Well, no, the problem with that isn't that we've misunderstood or we need another word for the second kind. It's we need to redefine what work is. There's nothing wrong with work. We should be able to talk about the nobility of labor without a smirk, even if it's hard. Because when we expand that definition of work, that's when retired folks fit really well into what Paul has to say in 2 Thessalonians. My dad retired, as I'm sure I've mentioned before. I called him about a year after and said, so how's it going? He said, I don't know how I ever found time to go to work. Because he was busy. Which I strongly recommend to any particularly male person who is going to retire. If you look at people who have a successful retirement, and particularly thinking of men, that means that they lived at least 3 years. It's because they did things. It's because when they retired from whatever job it was, they then started doing other things, probably not getting paid. Some people have taken another job in retirement, and that's terrific. But most volunteer more. They spend more time with people than they had time before. They're doing things. That's what my dad was doing. And it's not like he suddenly started working in the church for 40 hours a week, only not being as unpaid labor. No, but he was able to volunteer a little bit more. And he was able to spend more time with those people that he was connecting with, mentoring, discipling, whatever language you want to use. And he had a rich, full life. He continued to do things. That was when he was in Alberta. He came to Saskatchewan. He got an undergraduate degree in his 60s, he got married again, got to see grandkids, and all through that time, he did things. He was at work. Because that's what we're created to do. I know this flies in the face of all kinds of things. Human beings were created to work. We were not created to be oppressed by a job that doesn't pay enough to feed our families. We were not created to be worked into an early grave. I'm not talking about that kind of thing. I'm not saying that all work is identical or equal, because it most certainly is not. Every work situation is not a wonderful thing. But we were created to work. We were created to work in partnership with God to bring God into this fallen world through our efforts. And that's work. Sometimes it's hard work. Sometimes it's hard physical labor. Sometimes it's talking to people, which for most of us isn't hard work. But it's still something we have to do. It's the expenditure of energy in the moving forward of something of value. That's what work is. And when you talk to people who are happy, when you talk to people who are satisfied with the life they live, these are people who work. Not all the time, who have a balance between work and not work. This is what Paul is talking about. And the people that he's describing as idle are the ones who say, I don't have to do that. Just because I don't want to. I don't have to be part of God's purpose in this earth. I don't have to pull my own weight, whatever that looks like, because it's not the same for all of us. And you have to take care of me. Not because I can't take care of myself, but because I don't want to. And Paul says, those people need to grow up. He uses different language, but that's what he's saying. Paul uses some hyperbole there. He's not saying that people who are lazy should be sent off to starve to death, that the best outcome for them is to starve to death. Paul is saying, look, this is a big thing. If these people aren't willing to put in the effort to do the work that God has called them to do, then you shouldn't be supporting them, because they need to understand what they're doing and come back to where they should be. At which point, they will work, and all will be well. Because the answer to the question, work is biblical, is yes, of course it is. It gives meaning to our lives. But it only gives meaning to our lives when we expand our definition of work past the simplistic, this I get paid to do, into this is what I do. Is it not work to be kind to all your family members sometimes? I'm not speaking for anyone except myself, but for me, sometimes it is, because sometimes my family drives me crazy. And sometimes I drive them crazy. And we work hard at being kind anyway. Is that not work? Nobody pays me for that. Nobody pays my kids for putting up with me. But it's still work. We do ourselves a disservice when we don't honor the efforts that we make. Because those efforts are work. Work in an unbroken stream that goes back before the fall. To God asking people to do things. Is this because God couldn't come up with names for the animals? Of course not. But because God, in his infinite wisdom, in ways that we don't really understand, says, I want you to be part of what I'm doing. I want you to help. Not in a patronizing sort of way, but this is what you can do to make the world a better place. Your work, whether you're getting paid for it or not, is going to improve creation. What could be more noble than that? What can be more life-affirming than that? When we misunderstand work, we end up in all kinds of bad places. We look at it as a necessary evil, as I've already said, which is simply wrong. We look at it as an untrammeled value in that whole fiduciary, transactional kind of way, where we say that, look, if you don't have a job, you're worthless. And any job you have is just as good as any other job. Why on earth would we put in any effort to creating a world where we have some kind of economic equivalence? A job is a job is a job. Well, no, it's not. We're not talking about any of those things. We're saying we need to work because we go crazy if we don't, and we drive other people crazy in the meanwhile. That's what these idle busybodies were doing. Going around, interfering with other people, getting in the way. It's really hard to get in somebody else's way if you're doing something that you should be doing. I suppose it could happen, but probably not. When we look at what we've been given, when we look at the spiritual gifts we have, when we look at the talents that we have, when we look at the experience we've acquired, when we look at the passions we have, our interests, we look at all of these things and we say, how can I apply some of these today or tomorrow as part of this continuum of who I am? And when we exercise these things, we're doing work. We're not being idle. Because that's what we're called to do. Take a close and careful look at who we are, what it is that we can do to make this world a better place in the name of God, not just in our own, and do it. Because that's what biblical work is. Work is biblical. It has fundamental value. And when we remember those things, it makes the work we do, even some of that work that doesn't have that immediate sense of this is making a surprising difference, it ennobles all that we do. Every bit of work that you do, where you're doing your best to make the world a better place, either through getting a paycheck to support your family, or the more obvious, working to help somebody's life be better. It's all part of what God created when He created work. And if nothing else, if God worked, and worked enough to need a rest after creating everything, who are we to say that we shouldn't have to? Amen.